Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 130 for the week of September 20th, 2021. Before we start, a reminder, you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. You can also download a PowerPoint presentation that includes images of those same charts you can use in your own presentations. Before we dig into the usual market and economic indicators, I wanted to talk about driver hiring. As we discussed a couple of weeks ago, this summer we finally started to see some meaningful gains in payroll employment in for-hire trucking. In the first 5 months of this year, the industry netted just 3,100 new payroll workers, but it added 16,500 in June through August, according to the most recent data. Surely not coincidentally, the last 3 months also has seen the strongest hiring activity for CDL drivers since the start of the pandemic, at least as indicated by the number of pre-employment queries performed in the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. Now, in case you're not familiar with this concept, since the clearinghouse took effect in January of last year, whenever an employer wants to hire a driver who is subject to drug and alcohol testing, the company must query the clearinghouse to see if a positive drug test has been reported. Therefore, the number of queries performed is a pretty good proxy for the level of hiring activity for CDL drivers, and this includes both for hire and private CDL drivers, as well as interstate and intrastate. Basically, if a CDL is required for the job, there's got to be a query. Now, interestingly, during the strongest period of trucking job growth during the pandemic, which was August through December of last year, we did not have nearly as many pre-employment queries as we do now. Now, you might think that undermines my proposed correlation between the number of queries in driver hiring activity, but I don't think that's the case for a few reasons. First, that was very early in the recovery, so carriers needed to bring back many workers, not just truck drivers, and only CDL drivers are subject to drug and alcohol testing. Also, to the extent that drivers were returning to the carrier that had furloughed them, we might not have even seen pre-employment queries. Now, technically, federal regulations would require that those queries had been conducted if the driver had been gone more than 90 days, but I suspect there was some confusion on that front. Finally, and this might be the biggest reason of all, the recovery in trucking was still quite uneven a year ago, given that van freight had recovered much of its lost freight, but flatbed and other specialized segments had not, and in fact still haven't, really. At this point, we do have a much more broad-based recovery. Unfortunately, the data on pre-employment queries seems to be largely coincidental with payroll employment changes and not a leading indicator, and that has to do with reporting periods for both the Bureau of Labor Statistics and when FMCSA reports its own data. Still, it's pretty interesting data. There's a graph in the presentation deck accompanying this podcast that compares the number of pre-employment queries to the change in trucking payroll jobs since January of last year. While we're talking about the clearinghouse, I would note that through August, more than 87,000 drivers had been flagged with a violation, and nearly 70,000 of those are still barred from driving a truck. According to our calculations, that's 2.4% of all drivers who have been queried who have been found to have had a violation, and 1.9% of all drivers who are queried are still barred. It's also noteworthy that we still haven't begun to see a decline in the number of drivers testing positive, which is something in theory we should see at some point. It's a good thing that we are taking drug-using drivers off the road, of course, but it is a little disheartening that so many remain that we are not reducing the rate on a monthly basis. You'll see a chart of the monthly positive results in the clearinghouse in the slide deck as well. The data from the clearinghouse reinforces the challenge trucking companies are facing in recruiting, and also why so many of them are worried about a COVID vaccine mandate. Last week, we talked about the American Trucking Association's objection to the Biden administration's proposal to require vaccinations or at least weekly COVID testing for employees of companies that have 100 or more employees. More recently, the Truckload Carriers Association added its own thoughts to the chorus of objections. The statement issued by TCA is interesting as it raises the issue of logistics of vaccinating the ranks of truck drivers who work all over the country. I get that, but while ATA's argument rested on the discriminatory nature of the Biden proposal, i.e. that vaccines or testing were required for companies that had 100 or more employees, but not for smaller firms, the TCA statement does not raise that issue at all. Instead, TCA argues that the White House proposal would lead to a, quote, massive driver exodus from this great industry, end quote. On the face, that argument doesn't sound compelling. After all, if a driver wants to avoid vaccinations or testing, he or she would just need to get a job with a smaller carrier, or perhaps go out and get his or her own authority, as more than 100,000 have done over the past year. However, part of the answer lies, I'm sure, in TCA not wanting to pit large carriers against smaller carriers. But that's not really the issue that TCA is getting to, although it doesn't say it. And that goes to just what the profile of the industry is. Although fewer than 1% of all trucking companies have 100 or more drivers, and by the way, I recognize that 100 more employees and 100 more drivers are not the same, but it's close enough for this purpose, that tiny group of 1% or less than 1% employs between a half and two-thirds of all truck drivers in for-hire trucking, depending on what assumptions you want to make about the data. So it's not just pitting big carriers against little carriers. It's really just simple math. There isn't enough trucking capacity at smaller carriers to accommodate all the drivers who might want to move from a company that is subject to regulation to a company that is not subject to it, at least certainly not within a few weeks or even a few months, perhaps not even within a few years. Okay, so we're not going to resolve this issue in this podcast, but let's move on and talk about the spot market for the week of September 17th, which is week 37 of the year. Load postings in the truckstop.com system bounced back from a Labor Day-induced lull, jumping about 26% to exceed the volume recorded during the week prior to Labor Day. The principal segments of dry van, refrigerated, and flatbed each posted gains of more than 20%, but dry van and refrigerated did not recover all of the volume lost during the holiday week. Flatbed's growth more than made up for that, however, to make for total volume exceeding the volume the week before Labor Day, as I mentioned. Volume in the latest week was about 29% above the same week last year, and about 153% above the five-year average. The holiday outlier aside, total spot load postings have held mostly steady since early July, a trend that outpaces, in general at least, seasonal expectations. The situation seems unlikely to change much soon, given continued supply chain disruption. The three largest segments remain well above last year's volume, although the specialized segment, which we don't talk about in detail in this podcast, in week 37 was significantly below prior year levels for the first time this year. Truck postings rose just over 8%, which is only about half the decline during the prior week. With the gain in capacity not matching growth, the market demand index, which is the ratio of loads to trucks in the truckstop.com system, rose to nearly the level recorded 3 weeks earlier. Among the three largest segments, flatbed was mostly responsible for the increase in truck postings. Okay, let's look at volume by segment. Dry van load postings rose about 24% after falling about 21% during the holiday week. Volume in the latest week was about 2% below the volume recorded during the week before Labor Day. Refrigerated load volume increased more than 22% after dropping about 30% in the holiday week. Load postings were nearly 15% below week 35's level, but remember, week 35 was a record for refrigerated. Refrigerated spot volume tends to be soft following Labor Day until it spikes in the run-up to Thanksgiving, and we'll have to see if that typical pattern holds or whether we will see a bounce back as we've seen in refrigerated due to the ongoing disruption in the industry. Flatbed load postings jumped nearly 30% after falling about 14% during the holiday week. While dry van and refrigerated fell short of their pre-holiday volumes, as I mentioned, flatbed load postings were nearly 12% ahead of week 35. Okay, let's talk spot rates. The broker posted rate per mile, excluding fuel, declined nearly 6 cents for the largest decline in 5 weeks. Rates are about 17% higher than the same 2020 week, excluding fuel surcharges. Dry van rates fell more than 8 cents and are 10% higher than rates in the same week last year. Refrigerated rates also were down a little more than 8 cents from the prior week's record level and were about 24% higher year over year. Flatbed rates declined nearly 3 cents and were nearly 18% higher than the same week last year. Okay, let's talk briefly about diesel. So last week's marginal decline, and I do mean marginal, it was a tenth of a cent, in diesel prices was not the beginning of a trend. The national average price was up 1.3 cents during the week ended September 20th to $3.38.5. By the way, I realized that I misspoke last week and I got the numbers all mixed up. The price of diesel last week was not $3.72.2. It was $3.37.2. Sorry about that. Hope I didn't cause any heart palpitations or anybody to spit out their hot coffee. Meanwhile, crude prices have been above $70 a barrel since the last podcast, so we should not expect much, if any, relief in the coming week. Okay, let's wrap up our discussion of weekly data by talking about the unemployment situation, which was a little muddled in the latest week. For only the second time in 8 weeks, the number of seasonally adjusted initial claims for unemployment benefits was higher than it was the week before. Even so, it was just 20,000 higher, and that's really not much of a worry, at least not yet. Also, the number of continued claims in state programs fell by 187,000, which is pretty significant, to under 2.7 million. The latest data we have for the federal programs is only through August 28th, and it shows continued claims totaling 9.3 million. However, as we have discussed, this data lags and does not reflect the fact that all of those benefits ended on September 6th. Let's move on to monthly indicators, and we'll start with the industrial economy. Industrial production was up 0.4% in August, after rising 0.8% in July. However, if you're worried about growth slowing, recognize that the data reflects at least two distortions in comparing August to July. First, July's industrial production was bolstered by a sharp growth in automotive manufacturing that resulted not really from organic growth, but rather from a decision by many automakers to forego some or all of their usual July shutdowns in an effort to catch up with demand for replenishing inventories. Also, August output was hit by Hurricane Ida late in the month. The Federal Reserve estimates that the hurricane held down industrial production by 0.3%, and that would have almost matched the July growth without the hurricane. So you see, when you actually analyze the data, it's really not so bad. Also, it isn't much, but August represented a milestone for industrial production in that it is now recovered to pre-pandemic levels, seasonally adjusted. Industrial production in August was a whopping 0.3% higher than it was in February 2020. Year over year, industrial production was up 5.9% in August. Manufacturing output in August was up 0.2%, which was well below the 1.6% gain in July. But the same factors I mentioned in connection with overall industrial production help largely explain the relative weakness here. For example, the Fed noted that the hurricane forced plant closures for petrochemicals, plastic resins, and petroleum refining. Relative to February of last year, manufacturing output in August was up 1%. And like industrial production, manufacturing output was up 5.9% year over year in August. Before moving on, I want to touch on the automotive industry, which, as I mentioned, had a substantial positive impact on July's industrial sector figures. The Fed's revised figures moderated the July gain somewhat, but it was still close to 10% after the revision. In August, motor vehicle and parts output was basically flat, rising just 0.1%. But production was down 4.9% year over year and was 5.6% lower than it was in February of last year. Okay, let's move on to the consumer economy, which did quite well in August, all things considered. Total retail and food service sales were up 0.7%, which isn't bad, but it's particularly encouraging considering that motor vehicle and parts dealer sales fell 3.6% in the face of severely depleted inventories. If we exclude automotive, retail and food service sales were up 1.8%. Only two other relatively small categories, that's electronics and appliance stores, and the category that includes sporting goods and bookstores, were negative. Although slightly more than half of the other retail sectors posted growth below that 1.8% total gain, several sectors posted robust growth. Non-store retail was up 5.3%, furniture and home furnishings 3.7%, general merchandise was up 3.5%, and department stores were up 2.4%. Now, my guess is that back-to-school sales, and that would include furnishings for college dorms and apartments, were stronger than usual because they reflected the fact that back-to-school spending was very weak last year, and that resulted in stronger pent-up demand. I mean, you can't return to school in 2021 wearing 2019 fashions, right? One thing I found interesting in the data is that sales for restaurants and bars was flat. That's interesting because in the payroll jobs data, leisure and hospitality, which is dominated by restaurants and bars, also was flat in August. Compared to February 2020, retail sales in August were significantly stronger in all categories. The weakest comparison was 8.7% in restaurants and bars. The strongest was 34.7% in non-store retail. And strong sales mean lean inventories, usually, we have been seeing some very slight increases in the ratio of inventories to sales as retail sales have flattened out at high, in fact, near record levels. But it is largely a meaningless increase. However, in absolute terms, retail inventories are still rising if you exclude motor vehicles and parts, which are severely depleted owing to the combination of strong sales as a result of stimulus and reduced production as a result of ongoing shortages of semiconductors. Auto inventories did rise marginally in July for the first time since September, or December, I should say, but they are still 34% lower than they were in February 2020. Finally, this week, let's touch on inflation, which is continuing to moderate after a sharp increase this spring, largely related to the issue I just covered, the high demand for cars, trucks, and SUVs in face of declining inventories. That situation led to sharp increases in pricing for especially used vehicles, but also to some degree new vehicles, and that drove monthly inflation rates that we had not seen in about 40 years. Although inflation remains very elevated compared to the same period last year, the trend definitely is positive. Consumer price index for all items was up 0.3% in August, which is in a normal range. Excluding the volatile food and energy sectors, the CPI was even milder, coming at an increase of just 0.1%, and that's the smallest gain since February. So that's it for this week's trucking market update. Let's recap. Driver hiring activity in August was the strongest of the pandemic. Spot market volume rebounded after the Labor Day holiday week. Diesel prices rose as crude prices are once again above $70 a barrel. The unemployment situation was mixed in the latest week. Industrial production and manufacturing output moved higher in August. Retail sales increased in August and remained near record levels. Retail inventories were marginally less lean in July, and consumer inflation continued to moderate after a sharp increase this spring. Next week, I personally will be on vacation, but the podcast continues. Join guest host Jonathan Starks, FTR's Chief Intelligence Officer, for a discussion of several housing metrics, housing starts and sales of new and existing homes, as well as the usual recap of spot market metrics, diesel prices, and anything else that Jonathan might find interesting. That's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 130 for the week of September 20th, 2021. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and railcar. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.